We've all gathered this morning to pay a lasting tribute to one of our community's most friendly, upbeat, lively individuals that anybody could ever be blessed to know. And that, of course, was our dear Barbara Calvo, of blessed memory. She was 84 years old. Barbara was born July 15th, 1940, to her parents, Richard and Rose Kahn. Barbara was married to her beloved husband, Dr. Sidney, probably better known as Stan Calvo, for 46, 47 years before his passing quite some time ago. They were blessed with wonderful children, Dr. Tony Calvo, Shia Calvo, Dr. Tony Walbaum, I should say, Shia Calvo, and Dr. Richard Calvo, who unfortunately passed away several years ago. She is survived by her siblings, Joni Makita and Michael Kahn, and she also had another sister who has since been deceased, Jackie Bear Rubin. Barbara was a very loving individual, many friends, always greeted you with a smile. In fact, I don't recall any time ever encountering her at any kind of a community event in the dentist office where she didn't have a smile and a great story to tell you and even to share some wonderful humor that put a smile on your face. She was extremely selfless individual. She spread her joy and love of life wherever she went. She was a loving mother, of course, and she was the consummate grandmother who loved to be addressed by her first name. Likely it reminded her and all of us of her very youthful disposition. Her children's friends referred to her as the cool mom back in the day. But I got news for you. They weren't the only ones who referred to her as someone who was cool. She was very independent, and she had a way about her, a very pleasant way about her, that she didn't let others define who she was. You know, it's very difficult to live by those principles, especially in this 21st century. We're 25 years into the 21st century, and human nature, human condition is such that we want to please, that our tendency is to please people how we think and to conform with how other people view us. We want to fit that so we don't disappoint them, so we don't receive any criticism, or that we are just perfect in every way that they could possibly think. I need to be who you think and who you imagine I am. And that is a symptom of modern day Western culture. Barbara had the innate ability and talent to be herself and not let others identify her or define her, yet she did it with such grace and flawlessly that you don't even note it unless you think about it and meditate on how she lived her life. She was free. She was free to do what she wanted, graciously helping people in any way that she wanted, and she was received in this way. She was received in the light of being this kind of an individual, a precious soul. It reminds me of that song by Frank Sinatra, My Way. She can say, she lived life, I did it my way, without hurting others, and in fact, enhancing the lives of others by doing it her way. She had this sense of entrepreneurial status that I live life, and I want to live it to the fullest, and be a part of everybody's life and be a joyful component to everybody else's life. She loved, for sure, she loved her children without question. She was very independent, and she might not have taken orders really well. That's part of my way philosophy. But again, not at the expense of anybody else. She loved to spoil her grandchildren. They were her pride and joy. And there was a time when her grandchildren were much younger, and she would actually look after them, you know, quite a bit. I don't know if on a daily basis, but quite a bit while their parents were, you know, busy getting their lives moving in their respective directions. And a very, what I found very entertaining and just sweet as could possibly be, Tony and Shaya. By the way, I never referred to Tony as Tony. I always referred to her as Dr. Walbaum. Please forgive me, especially when she has, you know, dental instruments in her hands. And I'm as Dr. Walbaum, but forgive me today. I hope you'll let me call you by your first name. So they conveyed a very precious story when Barbara was watching her loving grandchildren, when one of the kids said to their parents, either on the way to Barbara's home or just driving around when they were anticipating being with her, they said, I hope Barbara will let us have ice cream for breakfast again in the tub. So again, this was the doting grandmother who would do anything for her grandchildren, and apparently she did. But again, she did it her way, and I'm sure they loved her all the more. Barbara was married to her high school sweetheart, Dr. Sidney, or Stan Campbell, as he was affectionately known. And her family tells me that Barbara was his first and only sweetheart in life. He loved her dearly. She was the girl from Bremerton who made her way to Seattle on multiple occasions to be with the eventual love of her life, Stan, to whom she was married for 47 blessed years until his passing. And together, they lovingly raised their children, Tony, Shia, and Richard. She was a very protective mother, as most people, most mothers who have that maternal instinct, but she was a very determined, she had a very determined maternal instinct, and she would let nobody hurt her children in any way, shape, or form. Very protective. Another, I find, a precious and entertaining story that Shia was relating to me is the kids always knew that their mother would have their backs. That's really a nice thing. When you know your mom and dad, I mean, you can't do anything wrong, but you know that they're always there for you, and they will come to your defense, and they will protect and take care of you. That's really a blessing. However, there was one, maybe more, but one that they told me about, where when Shia was in grammar school or grade school, he was either sent to the school administrator's office or counselor's office or the principal's office, and they said, Shia, what you did is not right, and I don't know how this occurred, but I'm going to get on the phone and call your mother. To which Shia responded, please do. And then he proceeded to sit in the chair while the principal made the phone call, and he sat back and literally put his feet up on the desk while the principal made the call, thinking to himself, he better have an airtight case or he's going to be in for one rude awakening when he talks to my mom. I don't know what the outcome was, but it sounded like it was something good for you. Maybe that's where you developed your attorney-like talents.
Toughness,
yeah. Yeah, very good. But the beauty of all that is, as humorous and entertaining and precious as that anecdote might be, was, again, the kids always knew I have my mom and dad. They will never betray me. They will always take my side. And that is not such an unhealthy position to have. Who would ever, when you walk into the family practice, it was a family practice of their dental practice over all the years, who would ever walk into that office and not be greeted with warmth and kindness? You look so forward, you look so much forward going to the dentist's office, and she made it even that much more wonderful. She greeted you with her warm smile, salutations, and often some form of good humor, asking about your family. She was such a fixture in her family's dental practice, it's just not the same there without her. Even in the early years, she was such a devoted and kind and giving human being who did acts of kindness, that even when youngsters would come to the office, high school students would come to the office when her husband was practicing, she would tell the parents, you know, if you can't bring them here, if you can't bring them to take them home afterwards, drop them off and I'll drive them home afterwards. They couldn't even imagine something like that happening today. You'd have to sign so many waivers and upload how many forms and two witnesses to bear that everything was, release of any kind of liability. But that's what she was. She was a trusting and a trusted individual, such that quasi-strangers would say, absolutely, bring my kids home. And not only that, but she showed tremendous compassion to all of the patients who came in to the office if they needed. She would be a sympathetic ear, and two of her children followed in the dental practice, Dr. Tony and Dr. Richard, and it really was a very much a family practice. Barbara was also, I don't have to tell you this, she was extremely stylish. She had her unique way of presenting herself. She was a shopping machine, I'm told, and could hone in on a product she was looking for in a store, in a mall, in no time with efficiency, probably buying things for her family, her children and grandchildren. She kept her vibrant, the style and her demeanor of her attire. It kept her vibrant, it kept her energetic, even to the very end. Al called me, we saw each other last week, and I saw the family last week at the hospital, and there she was lying in the hospital room, in her hospital bed. She had the strength, although she was weak, she had the strength to show me her beautiful smile. I was so moved by Al's attention to her. We both walked into the room together, and Al had this stack of letters that he had received from well-wishers, and he was he read each and every one to her, trying to cheer her up. She, blew us a kiss, her hair was in the beautiful colors that she adorned herself with, and frankly that brought comfort, because you still saw the same Barbara and her same disposition, even at a time when she was weak and only a few days left in her precious life. She was always upbeat, even in the hospital, even to the physicians, to the nurses. But there was a notable time over the recent past, where the staff noticed a diminishing of vibrancy, a kind of a melancholy feeling that may have come across her. And what had happened that the family told, and maybe the physicians and the nurses and the staff said, your mom, she's not herself today. And it was the day that she had remembered, I believe it was the same anniversary passing Richard's birthday. It was that date, Richard's birthday, and she could not bring herself to the vibrant spirit that she was. Yet she kept it to herself. She did not disclose it. She didn't want to burden others with what was troubling her, what was bothering her. Yet she had an outward appearance of something was off, something that she could never, ever forget. No parent, God forbid, should ever be stricken with the loss of a child, which unfortunately occurred to her and with her. She was valiant, she was courageous, and she obviously could never forget that moment in time. And when his birthday came, she affectionately remembered him quietly, unselfishly, and with much grace. She was also, as I've stated before, an extremely friendly person. She would make friends with total strangers. Again, something you don't do so much today, not because we're not friendly people or you might not be a friendly individual, but because, you know, we have so many fences built around us and we're very protective, not Barbara. She would actually make friends with her roommate in the hospital. In fact, the kids would say, Tony told me, she would say, "Mom, don't, you know, it's private. That's their business. This is ours." She goes, "No." She asked her for her first name, for her last name, for her phone number. Maybe they wanted to text. And she was able to get that information and exchange it back and forth because she really wanted to converse and know who that person was. Not for her safety, because she was just friendly and wanted to coexist with someone else in that room. Turns out that even at the behest of her children, you know, keep all this information to yourself. You know, don't spread, you know, HIPAA, all these kinds of things. You know, hospitals don't want everybody else's information going out. It wouldn't stop Barbara. She reached out to those people, and she like had a radar of who are trusting individuals, and that she felt comfortable reaching out to them. She had a very keen radar in her life, in her mind that she had. And lo and behold, she was successful in forging a relationship. So much so that in a brief hospital stage most recently, her hospital roommate, when she found out that Barbara had passed away, she began to cry and was in tears. So how do you forge a relationship, a friendship, in that short of a time, relatively speaking, and it brings the other individual to sadness and tears, emotions that don't happen with individuals over a lifetime of certain friendships. Perhaps one of her motivating factors in this trusting and trustworthy demeanor in which she carried her life was the one thing she didn't like was being by herself, being alone. So it's very smart. You know, even our rabbinic sages tell us, eat when you're hungry, drink when you're thirsty, go to sleep when you're tired. If you're lonely, go make friends and don't be lonely. It's not a victimhood. Loneliness shouldn't be a victimhood. She rose from it and made sure she had friendships and relationships throughout her life. And they just weren't selfish friendships. They were giving and taking. She received as much as she gave. Barbara loved her Jewish heritage and loved being part of the community. When she would come to synagogue, her same warm disposition would permeate about her, always offering a friendly greeting and a sincere smile. And when I say sincere, I mean sincere. Her dear life companion over these past many years was our dear and is our dear Al Ben Alil, Tu Kibiva Muchos Años Al Kondachai Salud. You were a loyal companion at her side always, worrying about her and praying for her well-being. And as I mentioned before, I saw you affectionately by her bedside in the hospital, doing everything you can to bring a smile to her face, sharing with her the letters and the greeting cards that came your way. You were telling her who they were from, and just trying to give her every motivation and every every reason to keep smiling and moving forward. And I know you will miss her dearly. To the wonderful family that she raised, and to their spouses, Tony and Ron, Shia and Sydney, you and your children and grandchildren were meant everything to your mom. You cherished her, you respected her, you worried about her, you looked after her, and you were the joy of her life. You were her oxygen. Her protective nature, her unwavering maternal instincts throughout your lives, along with the love and affection of your dear father, formed who you are to this day. You continue to be respectful, loving children, accomplished in your own right, and steadfast in your commitment and dedication to your families, a value they both transmitted to you as the good parents that they were. I've often remarked, and I believe I even told Barbara, how proud she must be that each one of her children are accomplished professionals, health providers, dentists, and attorney. And she and her husband raised them to be the wonderful people that we know them and care for them as well. So you are the legacy of your parents, and you carry yourselves well in that regard. There is a, and I'll close with this, there's a beautiful verse in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah was a prophet in Israel. And when the destruction of Israel was at the foot, and Isaiah was admonishing the people that they should correct their ways and repent so we don't lose our precious land, our precious Jerusalem, he conveyed a blessing from God when it came time to give them comfort. And it's a verse that we say, believe it or not, in rabbinic literature, we will take a verse, not we, the sages take a verse out of context and apply it to something that will also make sense, even though the context has changed. This is one of those verses. It's in Hebrew, and it's in the book of Isaiah. He's trying to give them comfort, that God is going to comfort them and bring them out of their sorrow. And the pasuk, the verse is, Ki ish, and this is the Hebrew, Ki ish asher imot anachamenu, ken anuchi anachemchem. Just like an individual for whom only his mother can comfort, I, God, am going to comfort you. So that is our blessing to all of you. Only the way a mother can comfort her children. We all know the power of a mother, of the maternal instinct. So only that way that is comforting by a mother, God promises to comfort you the same way. So that's our benachah, that's our blessing to you. And further, may the memories of your dear and beloved mother and your father, may they provide you the consolation that brings you peace and comfort, not only today during this difficult times, but throughout your life and always. May you only see blessings of happiness from your children, grandchildren, in health and contentment always. Amen. May your soul rest in peace in Gan Eden. Amen. Amen. We have two other speakers this morning. Shia.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think I pretty much recognize everybody in here. My name is Shia, aka Shia Boy, aka Mama's Boy. This is really hard, but I think everyone knows We all love Barbara with all of our heart. All of us. I always told that to my friends growing up, you know, I'd say, my mom is the coolest, no doubt about it. And that was from when I was, you know, who knows, 3 years old to today. So I think it's probably no surprise. I call my mom probably 5 times a day. You know how you hear people say, my mom calls me all the time and it's driving me crazy. I call my mom all the time. All the time. So, you know, this is true. The day after she died, I got up and I called her. I called her when I was going to use my phone to call her, and I just started crying. And then I gave Sally right to school and just kind of fell apart. Before I get into all the stories I want to tell, I want to talk about a few people. First of all, the people, it was a tough last couple weeks. My sister and Ron, they're absolute rock. I mean, my sister's always the rock, right? My sister's always the one that got the 4.0 in school. Shy, I was going to somehow make it somewhere, but my dad always thought I'd end up working at a gas station. But, but Tony, of course, and Ron were absolute rocks through this whole process. And Tony even, you know, Harvey is not the most friendly place. Harvey is not the most friendly place, but, or comfortable, I would say. But Tony, just so you know, even spent the last night together with my mom on this crappy little chair at Harvard Hospital that probably only Tony could fit in. And that morning is when she passed away. I want to thank Sydney and Sally for being there for me. It was a really difficult time for me, and still is right now. Solomon, Gabriel, and Shayna, I'm so proud of you guys sitting over there too. Everyone came to the hospital. And Shane is a doctor now, so, you know, she could actually explain what was happening, so we understood a little bit of what was going on. I knew nothing, so Shane would always help me through that. Gabriel actually came back from school from his, he is in dental school, and he came back from just prior to taking his exams. He flew all the way back just to see her. And Solomon also came, and I was really glad to see Solomon, because I think of Solomon as kind of the OG of the kids, and he, it was really nice to see him there, and we had to talk about some important things about my mom. It was really nice to have Solomon, you know, in the room to kind of talk about that. I want to thank Al. He says that he was Barbara's squeeze for the last 16 years, what Al always tells me. And I appreciate the fact that he stood by her side all the time. Sydney and I were talking, and Tony too, was like, he knew her medical situation better than any of us did. But he was there on her side the whole time, and I love him for that, and I appreciate that. And to all, everybody else here, friends and family, I just, you know, my family kind of teases me, they say I don't have enough friends. But I'll tell you one thing, my mom had a lot of friends. And everybody kept calling and wanted to come in and see her. Family wanted to come. And after a while, you know, she just didn't feel very good. So it was really hard for her. But I will say I wrote her obituary. And every 2 seconds, I got a text from one of her other friends, you know, asking what they could do to help Barbara. And I kind of know now what it feels like to have friends, because Barbara had a lot more to me. But I also want to thank, I see them out here, they're her friends at the summit who are back there. My mom really liked the summit. She liked being there with all of her friends, and they got bussed over here today just to see my mom, which is real important to all of us in the Cowell family, so, and the Walbaum family, and we really appreciate that. I will tell you that some of the funnest times I had the last year were when I go out to dinner with my mom at the summit. We always went on cheeseburger night, and you've never seen so many, I'm not cheeseburger. They don't exactly serve cheeseburgers from what I said.
That was just a wish.
But you've never seen anything funnier than all of these people sitting together and talking about whether or not it had to be cooked. It was medium rare, has to be medium rare. And they have to cut it down the middle. And they were like, and then they would talk about it when it came, this isn't medium rare, they try and send it back to the person and then cut it this way down the middle. And so my mom insisted I cut mine down the middle. I don't really know why, but I had a lot of fun. And I know my mom really enjoyed everyone at the summit. She would always tell me that, and I got the benefit of going out to breakfast with them. Not as much as I wanted to, but I went whenever I could. We would talk about politics, Sally's school, Solomon and Shana and Gabriel, how they were doing, how my sister was doing. We pretty much talked about everything. So I appreciate you being here. You know, we had kind of, we had kind of a crazy family, I decided. You know, my dad, I still don't really understand what my dad was thinking when he moved us all up to Burien. Here's this cowboy family in Seward Park, right, where Tony remembers living there. I really don't even remember being there. We lived by Uncle Sam, I knew that, but I don't know where, and Andrea, I don't remember the house. But my dad decides he's going to move us all up to Burien. We're going to be the only Jews in Burien. But I will say that it kept us really, really close, like crazy close. I think that's one of the reasons I struggle sometimes with friends, because I have my family, right? I have my dad, my mom, my sister, my brother. That was it. And I don't regret any of that. It was, you know, we talk about anti-Semitism today, but growing up in Burien, we really felt that. You know, people make jokes about me being a Jew boy, or terrible jokes about Holocaust kind of jokes, and I would come home and tell my family about it, and it was hard. But I always tell my parents. And my mom always telling me, that's just not right. So here we are today. I want to talk about my mom, though, because I got all these great texts from everybody. One person said that Barbara was magical, which is really pretty accurate, I think. I want to tell a little story because I need to give you the backstory a little bit. Those of you who know the Cowboys know that my dad liked to go out to breakfast. And he would let you go to breakfast. And we would go to the 13 Coins, to the Red Lion, to the Hyatt. We're not talking the ones in Bellevue, though. I'm talking the ones in SeaTac. That's where we went. And if you're really lucky, you got to order an orange juice. There were rules. My dad would say, now, no matter what I tell you, you cannot get a large orange juice. Because it was $3. So the thing would be, we'd be at breakfast, and my dad would say, well, the woman would ask, you know, the wait person would ask us, what do you want? Do you want oranges? Yeah, I want oranges. And they'd say, well, what size do you want? I'd say, oh, I think I want a small. And then my dad would say, you sure you don't want a large? He would beg us, you're sure you don't want a large? So we all knew the rules. Large was off the table, so we never got. Okay, so one of the stories I remember the most about my dad and my mom, I was the one at breakfast the most. I went to breakfast with my dad pretty much from the time I was 6 to the time I was, and even all through college, he'd come pick me up no matter where I was. He'd park out in front and go to breakfast. So one of the things he told me about, though, was he said, you know, your mom was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. She still is. You know that, right? And I'd say, yeah, Dad, I know. She said, you know, your mom was the, she got the best figure when she was in high school. She got that. So then one day we were having breakfast, and Richard and Tony didn't go that day. They didn't go as much as me, but I don't know. We always went for some reason. But he definitely married up as far as he was concerned. I can tell you that. We were sitting there, and he said, you know, it was the coolest day when I got married. I said, what was that? He said, well, we were up at the altar at Sparta Picker Home, and you all been there, so you know it has those windows on the side that have the color, right? That come, and he said, when your mom got up, and my dad didn't talk like this ever, when your mom got up to the front, the light shone through on her, right on her. The whole place was like dark, and the light came right through and shone on your mom. And he was like, I knew, you know, that was like God saying how wonderful your mom was. And she was the most beautiful person in the room. And I was just madly in love with your mom. It's a pretty good story, I thought. So, and he would always tell me, you know, yeah, your mom is the best. I said, I know, I know. And then he'd say, you know, your mom's shopping at Nordstrom way too much. And then I'd say, yeah, I know. And then the next thing he'd say would be, yeah, but she looks the best, doesn't she? I really think that he thought that God came down that day to tell him, you know, how wonderful Barbara was. And I know she's right next to me, how wonderful Barbara was. And that was all true. She was just so much fun. So the rabbi took one of my stories, but I still have more. So the thing was, my mom definitely had our back. That was totally accurate. I want to tell a story more about Tony this time than me, but one thing, you know, my mom was the ultimate shopper, though. We went to Nordstrom, Frederick and Nelson, and you've all probably eaten at Paul Bunyan Room. I got to go there every week. That was a cool place. But anyways. And I also thought every kid, you know, when I would go with my mom, she would spend hours at Nordstrom. And she would stick me in the rounders, and she'd give me my toy soldiers, and I'd get to play in the rounders like that. And I thought that's what every kid did. You know, the light would kind of come through, and I'd sit in there. And my mom, when I went and saw her room at the summit, she still had those toy soldiers on her dresser. And she said, you can have those. I said, no, you keep them. But it reminded me of that. But so my mom, when Tony was in fifth grade, got her some hot pants. I don't even know what those are. Tony knows, but they're apparently quite the pair of pants, I guess. And she was a fifth grader. And so Tony wore those to school. My mom bought them. Tony wore them to school. And next thing you know, the teacher, the male teacher, takes her out of the classroom and sends her to the principal's office because they weren't appropriate to wear to school for a fifth grader. So then according to Tony, I didn't even know the story. According to Tony, they called my mom and they said, you need to come talk to the principal because your daughter's wearing these hot pants. It's not appropriate for school. So Tony's thinking, I'm in a lot of trouble. And Tony, I got to say, was never in trouble, right? Tony, like, I don't think she got a B her whole life. So Tony's sitting there in the office and she's kind of nervous. And my mom walks in, you know, all dressed cool like she was always, she probably had her Gucci belt on, I don't know. But she said, she walks in the principal's office, Tony's sitting there. And she said, I want to know, yeah, I'm the mom. I'm Tony's mom. I want to know who that sick teacher is who says my fifth grade daughter is sexy. I want to know who that is. He thinks my daughter is sexy. And so Tony said that right away they were running for cover at that point. Oh boy, you know, this is, I figured out that's 1973 she said that, right? That was a pretty cool story. I remember being at Gregory Heights Elementary. That's where we grew up, and that it was right across the street from our house. I was almost kids. I was always like the sweaty kid, but I was great. All I cared about was lunchtime, playground. I was all sweaty, and my clothes were always crappy. And one day we were out in the at recess, and one of the girls, there was Lori Peters and Kelly Spurlock, my old friends from high school. Lori Peters says, you know, we're in these big cement things that came from the airport, because remember, we're by the airport there, and so we would play in them, these big cement structures that were round, they were super long. She looked at me and said, you know, you're kind of ugly. And I kind of hurt my feelings. I said, really? She said, yeah, you dress terrible. You're always like sweaty at school, and your clothes are worn out. And I was kind of looking at myself. No one ever told me that before. So that day, this is true. So that day I came home, fifth grade, came home and told my mom. I didn't believe what happened to me. So I was kind of surprised. I didn't think my clothes were that bad. My mom was really thinking, she's okay. We're going to eat dinner and we're going to Nordstrom's right now. We live by the South Center one, not the fancy town. We live at the South Center. You know, at the time, she spent like $1,000 on it, which was a lot of the time. And from that day forward, I was the best dressed guy in my school. I got best dressed in junior high and high school. That never happened to me. No way. So I want to tell the story about the pot. The rabbi kind of told the story, but I'll give you a little more detail. I had Richard Bear is here, I think, but he's my cousin, and he was like, Pop Rocks got to be a big deal when I was a kid. Remember what Pop Rocks are? So my cousin said, you know, these are the pot thing right now. Everyone's buying them. And we couldn't get them where we lived in Burien. No one had Pop Rocks. So I was in junior high, and I told Richard Berry, hey, how many of those can you get me? So he said, well, I can get you about, I don't know, you give me like 30 bucks, I'll give you as many as $30 or $40 to buy. So I gave him the money, and he gave me the Quack Rocks. I bought them for like 10 cents a piece and sold them for like $1 a piece, or 10 or $2 a piece. And so I was just killing our store. We had a store in school, and I would stand out front of the store, and I would sell my stuff. And it was funny, I was making like, I mean, I don't know what happened, I'm the worst business person ever now, but I made like $20 a day in like junior high doing this. It was crazy. So one day the principal grabs the back of my shirt and he pulls me in the, I mean, I know you can't do it anymore, but that's what he did. Pulls me in his office, says, you're in big trouble. And I'm like, what did I do? What's wrong? He goes, you're selling Pop Rocks at school. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. That's what I'm in trouble for? So he said, I'm gonna call your mom. And so right away I was like, yeah, go ahead and call my mom. I told him, I said, this is not going to go well for you. This is not going to be okay for you to call my mom. And she knew about it too. So just as he said, I mean, I went in his office and it was one of those old phones with the push buttons, you know. But he had us on speaker and he's like, and he kind of, hey, this is Principal so-and-so, this is Mrs. Calvin. She goes, yeah, your son's here. He's in a lot of trouble. My mom's like, oh, what's it about? And so she says, so at this point, I'm kind of sitting back in the chair. I knew what was going to happen, so I kind of put my feet up, you know, on the desk. Tony put him down, he was really mad at me. That was kind of a cocky kid. But he said, your son is selling Pop Rocks at school. And my mom started laughing at him. Oh, that's what you're going about? She goes, he was going to buy a weight set with that money. And then she told the guy, don't you think you have something better to do than do the go through a gift for selling Pop Rocks at school? And he sent me. Running, but it was kind of cool. I knew all along my mom would come through for me, but she always did. She was really funny too. I mean, one of the things she did was when I was a senior in high school, you know, when you become a senior, you kind of think you're cool, right? Like, I would on purpose, we weren't the best cooks in our house. My mom became a foodie at the Summit. I'm not sure how that happened, but we were never doing that. But my mom, we'd make our own lunches, and I got the habit of not making money, because when I didn't make it, my mom would bring me lunch from Hobie's Corner. So I got really used to that, and my mom told me, you know, and it was like 4 or 5 days in a row, and she said, you know, if you don't stop doing this, I'm going to really embarrass you at school. You're going to be sorry. And I'm like, So I just kept doing it. And she kept, you know, Hobie's Corner, my friends would literally be there and say, oh my gosh, what'd you get today? And I'd look at this, you know, I had this great sandwich. They were all jealous. And so one day I'm sitting in the classroom and the teacher's assistant comes in, you know, from the office because I got a delivery if I was my sandwich. Get this big bag. So my friends are looking like, oh, what's that? And I'm thinking, I didn't know what it was either. So I open the bag up and I'm not kidding. Inside the bag is a small tree that had a bunch of condoms on it. And they were all hanging from the tree. I know. I hope that's okay, Sam, but that's what it was. And they were all hanging. I pulled it out of the thing, and my friends just started cracking. They were like falling out of their chairs. They thought it was so funny. And then my friends say, hey, there's something else in the box, in the bag. What is it? So I pull it out. It's this preparation nature. It was like, so my mom had a little note that said, no lunch today. So I started making my own lunch after that. So, she really was really good with her grandkids. It was really cool when we were younger. I remember Solomon and Shana the most just because they were the first ones. But Solomon and Shana would always say, so my mom had the role. He's right. My mom had a role. I'm not a grandma. I'm Barbara. And you guys, all you guys only call me Barbara. I don't want to be grandma. Clear? Okay. So, I have a few stories. One of them was, when Solomon was little, we used to drive around. My mom had this Cadillac. She'd always drive it around. Solomon was always in the back seat of my mom, because I think she was babysitting because Tony was at work. She always played Phantom of the Opera with Solomon in the car. I mean, always, though. They get in the car, the Phantom of the Opera is just blaring all the time. Nothing else can be played in Phantom of the Opera. Because Solomon's in the car. We've got to play that for Solomon. So then one day, like, Solomon's in the back seat, and he's in the kid's seat, and he's like, he's like not very old. He must have been like 4 years old, I'm guessing. I don't know how old he was. He was really small. He was in the back seat in the car seat. and the music was off, and he starts singing Phantom of the Opera. He liked the whole thing. I mean, she played it for him like 1,000 times, but he knew the whole thing. I said, Mom, this guy knows Phantom of the Opera. She says, yeah, we play it every day. And so, and I really think that maybe that's what led to Solomon being the artist that he is today. You know, he was really with my mom, and she was just so much fun. The other thing she did was, I can't say the words in here, but if you cut yourself, if you hurt yourself, right? You cut your hand, you burn your hand, you fall down. You're supposed to say as many swear words as you can in a row, right? And I can't say the words in here, but they have a lot of C's and F's and things like that. And we all did that. All of us, Sally did that too. That was, we all did that. And she would do it though. It'd be funny. She'd do that and she'd be screaming and everyone's like, ah, that's Barbara. And then the funny thing, I talked to Shana a little bit too, and she said, you know, Barbara would take us to Nordstrom, and then we'd pull up in the driveway, and she'd tell the kids, now hide all the clothes, put them in the trunk, stands here. And she would take them out and buy them clothes, and we always had, I mean, Sally was the same way. Everyone always had the best, only the best clothes for school. Like, you know, I remember Sally one time got these Doc Martens. She wore them like 3 times, but they were super tall, and they were just amazing. But my Sally story like that is, I remember Sally's bat mitzvah. We had to get her clothes for the bat mitzvah, and Sydney and I aren't very organized, so Noah wanted to leave that to us. So Noah was in charge of getting, Sydney's mom was in charge of getting the one for the service. So she picked out a great dress that Sally actually wore quite a bit, you know, really appropriate for the service. And then Barbara was in charge of the one for the reception of the party. So Sally said that Barbara took that pretty seriously. They drove around for 3 days trying to get it. They went to Nordstrom, the Bond, every store in Bellevue Square couldn't find anything. So then Sally decides to pick, my mom picks up Sally, says, we're going out to Edmonds today. We're going to the prom dress place. So Sally said it was really cool because she's 12 years old, all these kids going to prom trying all these dresses, right? And she did say that Barbara made her feel really good. She's like, I don't know, Barbara, this kind of shows too much. She's like, oh, you're great. That looks great on you. Just get it. And so Sally got to pick out what she thought was the coolest dress. And again, that was Barbara doing that. So, you know, it is really sad about my brother. It was a really tough time. And I know my dad and my brother are in heaven right now. And mom is going to be with him pretty soon. So, Dad, if you're out there, Dad, if you're listening to me, Dad, so you can take mom, today's Thursday, so Saturday's coming up, you can take her out to 13 Points for breakfast on Saturday. They got one there. And I guess my only message to my dad would be, and Richie too, you know, mom's coming. Take her out, you can get the relish plate. The mom is coming to 13 Points with you guys. Because Saturday's coming up. And maybe this time my dad could let my mom order the large ones. This is really difficult, but I feel like we're just saying goodbye for now. And I just want Barbara to know that everyone loves her. It's just so impressive to see how many people came out to support my mom's life, right? She was just an amazing person. And I hope that, you know, we can all kind of aspire to be like that. So we love you, Barbara. And thank you all very much for listening to me tell my stories. I really love my mom, and I think we're all gonna be okay. Thank you very much.
Hard to follow my Uncle Shia. not quite an attorney, but the doctor's speech hopefully will work out too. Barbara was one of a kind. Although, as we've already talked about, she was an amazing grandma. She never wanted to be called one. She was just Barbara. No Grandma Barbara, no Noni, just Barbara. However, all of us here know, and everyone who knew her, knew she wasn't just Barbara. To me, she was my Barbara. My Barbara taught me a lot of things. One major thing was how to shop. Before every school year, Barbara would take me, each of my siblings, and Sally, on a shopping date, each of us on our own, to pick out some new clothes for the school year. For me, it started back at Lowman's, and then moved to JCPenney, and eventually Nordstrom's, of course. Barbara would go early to the store, find the trendiest salesperson, and already have several outfits picked out in the fitting room for me to try on. We would spend the whole day trying on the entire store. The piles in the dressing rooms were endless. And we would also spend a long time narrowing down to our favorites, which, as my Uncle Shia said, ended up being, there was a lot of favorites that we got to bring home with us. For all those here who are hoping I will share Barbara's secret in staying ahead of the trends and always looking fierce, unfortunately, I'm still trying to crack that code. But I would start by trying to push yourself to pick out the funky option, the one no one else might try on, and know that black is always on trend. My Barbara and Stan both emphasize the importance of music and theater in our lives. I'm pretty sure Solomon's first words were the soundtrack to The Phantom of the Opera. The children's theater was a defining spot for our childhood. We always sat in the front row or on the floor with all of our cousins, and we followed the show with Dick's Burgers. We were so into it that once Barbara and Stan bought us a dinner with the guy who yelled out 5-minute warning for intermission, also known as the 5-minute guy. I don't know his real name. We also went to the Highliners in Burien, where I remember really early on we saw Oliver, and then every show after that we would look for Oliver. He grew up. He was like an adult by the time we weren't going as often anymore, but those are really important memories. And now we always know if you're going to a play, you have to have good seats, how to sit front row, and that'll be forever for Barbara. Reflecting back, I feel so lucky that we got to spend so much time together growing up. The rules at Barbara and Stan's house were different. Dogs were people. You had to wear life jackets on the beach. And you could have ice cream before dinner. The ice cream for breakfast was not a one-time occurrence. We often had ice cream before dinner, and my dad was not very happy. I also remember, I have lots of memories of running around the Lake Burien house backyard. Barbara was leading the way. She would stretch her arms out to both sides, spin around, and just yell, "I'm free!" And we would do that all the way down the yard, and come back up, do it again. I hope that wherever you are right now, you're feeling as free as we did in those days. As I've gotten older, I've appreciated and learned new things from Barbara. She had the biggest heart that she wore on her sleeve. She always spoke her truth without much of a filter, but also without judgment. For Barbara, being cool was being your truer self, and she had a magical way of supporting and bringing this out in others. As Barbara said, she was a mover and a shaker. Not only was this true in her endless fitness journey with hot yoga and CrossFit in her 70s, but also in her work ethic. My mom told me that Stan once told her that Barbara was the key ingredient to the demo office. My mom has later agreed. Barbara knew all the patients. She remembered their family members, all their names, all their most recent life updates. And she, you know, as we've talked about before, even if someone wasn't so excited to go to the dentist, which is surprising to me, they were always excited to catch up with Barb over some tea. I saw for myself the way she supported all the employees at the clinic and helped create a bigger family rather than just a workplace there. It was a very hard decision for Barbara to stop working at the clinic, and I know she would have kept working there up until this week if her body allowed. For these past few years, it was hard to see Barbara slowed down by different health obstacles. I'm so grateful that she got to be there to celebrate Solomon and Kyle's wedding, got to see Gabriel start dental school, and me graduate medical school. She also made sure to make Sally's big high school performance this year and got to see her accept her college acceptance going to Pace next year. I'm also very grateful that she met my fiance, Avishai, and his family, and that he worked directly with her and my family to plan a beautiful engagement at the Vachon house. And she got to be there and join in the festivity. She beat the odds again and again to make it to our milestones. And I will forever, I will never be able to express how thankful I am for that. Even so, I was still not ready for her to go. I do know that there isn't a milestone that Barbara would miss for any of us grandkids. And I know she will be looking down on us, surrounded by dogs, standing by Stan, and cheering us on forevermore. Barbara was known for her short phone calls, so I will not go on too much longer. Barbara, shalom aleichem, over and out.